This is an Enterprise Times podcast. My name's Steve Brooks. I'm here with Guy Kirkwood, Chief Evangelist, UiPath. Hello, Guy.
Hi.
UiPath are one of the market leaders for RPA. What exactly is RPA, or robotic process automation?
That's a very good question, because a lot of people don't know. In fact, I was at an event about 3 or 4 months ago where people were talking about what they were doing in RPA, and someone stood up and said, what is RPA? So it's a good place to start. So robotic process automation, essentially taking away the crappy, shitty stuff that people don't want to do when they're doing their job. And that's essentially what it does. So it takes the manual processing tasks where you are moving information through and between systems and automates that. It's not physical robots. When we started 3-4 years ago, then people said, you know, how do you stop the robot pressing the screen too hard? So this is software robots, this is not humanoids. And this is part of the reason why, firstly, I never ever use a picture of a robot in my presentations, and secondly, the quicker we get rid of the word robot out of this, the better. I put the blame squarely with Blue Prism and Pat Geary, who really created the acronym of RPA, Robotic Process Automation. He's done a fantastic job, and so has Blue Prism, but that word robot really screws us up sometimes.
So what's your preferred term?
I have no idea. That's the problem. We need someone to come up with an alternative. As we look forward, then what we're going to see, these provided as a service. Unfortunately, it can't be called automation as a service because the acronym for that is ARS. So someone has got to come up with an alternative.
You're giving a speech this afternoon at OSX around RPA and AI. Is this the death of BPO, or business process outsourcing? Is it?
Yes, but of course, it's more nuanced than that. It's a little more complicated. In fact, if you look back to the history of RPA, it was the BPO companies, it was the outsourcing companies that used it first. And they used it to reduce their cost to serve to their customers. But they did not tell those customers. So a classic example, I have to be vague, I can't tell you who they are. A motor manufacturer in Europe, we automated a number of their finance and accounting functions and reduced the headcount of that operation by 75%. This was good. I was out talking about it. We got a call from the outsourcer saying, can you stop talking about this, please? We said, why? It's a great case study. And they said, it's because we did it, but we didn't tell the customer. So that type of hiding it to reduce their cost to serve, it can't happen anymore. And that's mainly because the market's a lot more educated about what RPA is and the impact it can have on their organizations. And so therefore the outsourcers are now looking to use RPA within their existing operations as an automation first. That's what we talk about at the UiPath, automation first mentality, in the same way that it's been mobile first and cloud first and whatever it might be. So we're moving towards that automation first. Basically because they have no choice. These organizations, particularly the Indian-based service providers, have tens, if not hundreds of thousands of people in their organizations. What's very interesting is that 9% of UiPath's revenues come from India. But 60%, that's 60%, of the people who have gone through our free training program, called the Academy, are based in India. So these organizations are not changing top-down, they're changing bottom-up, as the people in them. And that's not only the outsourcers, but also the shared service and captive operations that are run by companies, corporates, recognize that their job is going to change and they're training themselves up.
What you're inferring is the economics of outsourcing, where you're basically moving services offshore, is changing completely. What's to stop people insourcing RPA?
Nothing. And in fact, we were already seeing it. A number of our larger customers had previously outsourced operations to offshore locations, either within a captive shared service, GBS, Global Business Service type unit, or indeed outsourced, and they're now moving those activities back onshore because it doesn't matter where the robots are based. As a result of that, yes, we're already starting to see it. If you think about the start of the BPO market 20 years ago, then someone sitting in Manchester or Michigan was 3 times the cost of someone sitting in Mumbai. The economics of that was, on a one-for-one basis, it's cheaper for that to be done in Mumbai. Then what happened was that we saw a massive growth in those outsourcing organizations, up to some of them are 300,000 people now. But what they found was that as they became victims of their own success, so they had more and more people, and therefore the attrition rates went up massively. So they moved to Tier 2 and Tier 3 cities. And by the way, I define a Tier 3 city as having a university but no airport. So you can train the people up, but they can't escape. I literally have been on a bus for 5 hours getting to these places. The management of that is becoming more and more onerous for the US and Western European and other countries for running those operations in those offshore locations. So they were looking for an alternative anyway. RPA and ultimately AI combined with that is accelerating that process.
The other side is salaries are also increasing in India as well.
Correct.
In some of that area.
Correct. The labour arbitrage argument and the economic value of that has been deprecated over time.
We've talked about RPA a little bit, but we haven't really said what it actually is technically. You've kind of skirted around it. Can you go in a bit more detail on that?
There are really three organisations that are leading the RPA market. There is Blue Prism, which is a British business, founded in 2002. Their chief executive is Alistair Bathgate, very good British company. They floated on the secondary market in the UK, the AIM market, in 2016. Their share price was 78 pence, and it's gone up to £24. In fact, it's dropped slightly recently, but it's up around about the £20 mark. Stupidly, I didn't buy any shares. Blue Prism have been leading the market. They've really created the market, and they've done a fantastic job of doing that. The second organisation is Automation Anywhere. It's an American business run by a guy called Mahir Shukla. He's the chief executive. And that organisation has grown very substantially. In fact, they've just raised $250 million in a Series A funding, which is just astounding. And then the third organisation is our organisation, which is UiPath. So originally founded in Bucharest in Romania, and has now moved its corporate headquarters to New York City. We now operate across 16 countries with 30 offices. And we've grown really from 127 people to 1,400 in a year and a bit, which is just incredible growth. Those three organisations are really leading the RPA market. And what RPA does, regardless of which technology you decide to use, is to allow employees to do more work with customers rather than be bogged down by their existing workload. It doesn't matter which applications you're talking about. It will operate across green screen or mainframe applications, through any Word or Microsoft documents, through Outlook, through pretty much any structured data RPA provided by those three providers will be able to automate. And that allows the employee more time. And that's actually more important than the technology itself. We can come to that in a minute. Essentially, where the market is at the moment is that RPA is becoming the new business as usual for organisations, given the growth and acceleration of the market. And in fact, that works really well, because the B is Blue Prism, the A is Automation Anywhere, and the U is UiPath. So that BAU works out quite well. A guy called Alexander Gessel, who works for WorkFusion, one of the other providers, came up with that. It was a great description. RPA is a way for organisations to become more efficient, to reduce their cost of running their operation, and at the same time make their people more effective. So if we compare that to outsourcing, the relationship is one-to-one. You can improve the efficiency using Lean and Six Sigma and process improvement, which these organisations did, but the value of RPA is that the value per robot is between 3 and 5 individuals. That does not mean that you are replacing those people. What it means is that you are augmenting them, because what Gartner described as fingers and toes. If you are producing robots that can do the work of 15 people across an organization that's 30 or 40, that does not mean that 15 people will be made redundant, because it takes the bits of all of those 40 people and automates the bits that they don't want to do.
That's a quite a bullish statement in some ways, and it's obviously the pro-RPA view. The anti-RPA view is it obviously does take jobs, and no doubt the outsourcers in India who have those thousands of people sitting doing number crunching for those customers are likely to be losing jobs in those places. And the inefficient companies in the UK and US, etc., if they implement RPA, are also potentially reducing their headcounts as well through it. It does, what I do understand, is it does mean that individuals in those organisations are therefore able to innovate and communicate with customers rather than do administration.
Correct. There are two issues there. First one is that jobs will change. We're not saying that jobs won't change. We're not saying that jobs are going to be eliminated in the long run. Gartner and the World Economic Forum have both done studies which show that the impact of RPA and AI, the whole automation piece, is going to be a net promoter of jobs. In other words, there are going to be more jobs as a result of this rather than fewer. The second issue, and you've got this absolutely right, is that it's a culture change within organisations. And let me give you an example. Generali, which is a big Italian insurance business, about 80 billion euro, their Irish business is called Generali Link. The chief executive of that organisation is a chap called Carl Nolan. That's K-A-R-L, Nolan, N-O-L-A-N. He came up with a brilliant quote. What he found was that when they had automated a number of processes within their operation, he said, and the quote is, the mood music within our organisation has changed. We have happier employees, and we now measure our service in terms of compliments rather than complaints. That has nothing to do with technology. that is all to do with culture change. That led to a conversation that we're having with one of the leading Forrester analysts, a chap called Dave Johnson, who's been working on employee engagement. And there is a direct link, proven link, between improved employee engagement and improved customer experience. I mean, that across all of the research. What we're now saying, and we're doing a research project right now with Dave, is we're trying to prove that RPA and AI leads to better employee engagement, as evidenced by the Carl Nolan quote, and then improved employee engagement leads to improved customer experience.
What you're actually saying is there is an indirect and a direct link to customer satisfaction improvement through RPA, the indirect link through employee satisfaction increase, and secondly, by making those processes more efficient and more accurate, you're delivering a direct improvement to customer satisfaction as well.
Correct. It's two ways. And actually, it then feeds into jobs. So what I'm expecting to happen over the next few years is the number of people involved in back office corporate functions, finance and accounting, procurement, HR, the stuff that was traditionally outsourced, and industry specific processes, so claims processing and insurance or onboarding customers within banks or whatever it might be, the number of people doing that will reduce over time. But I think what we're going to see is a concomitant increase in the number of people doing customer experience. Customer intimacy will be the true key differentiator for organisations over the next 10, 15 years.
If I take the counter-argument slightly further and you look back in history, there is no doubt that technological innovation has meant that jobs have actually increased. However, there has been a pain point, and you're not mentioning any pain point yet. For example, when industrialisation came to farms, people flocked to the cities. That lowered the quality of living for those people in the cities because they end up working in manufacturing organisations. Yes, the quality of life in the farms increased because actually they had mechanisms to improve their daily life. But for those people who no longer worked on the farms and flocked to the cities, that quality of life definitely deteriorated. Over time, yes, it then went back up. Are we going to see the same thing?
Undoubtedly. I don't think we can avoid it. The question is when and for how long? If we look at the way that organisations and governments, we're doing a lot of work in public sector, are running themselves, what we're seeing is an improved efficiency that means that you won't necessarily get rid of the people, but you will be more efficient. One of our customers had 940 people doing a particular process, particular task. We then automated that process. So they still have 940 people in their operation, but they're now doing 70% more work. So there's a direct link there between the efficiency gain and the jobs remaining. And the other example I'll give, this is an indicator of what we're going to see in all industrialized nations, is what's happening in Japan. The Japanese population peaked in 2010. The Japanese population since that time has been falling. Plus all the baby boomers are now retiring. So the Japanese government have a serious problem. The amount of work that people do in Japan is becoming dangerous. There's actually a word in Japanese called koashi, which means to work oneself to death. And people do, literally, do that. There is no choice. They have to automate. I mean, that's why UiPath has been so successful in Japan. Our revenues are 40% North America, 30% Europe, and 30% Asia, which is unusual for that even spread. But it's even more unusual that the bulk of that Asian market is in Japan. So we have 75% of Japan's banks as customers in the last year. And it's because the Japanese government measure dangerous levels of overwork as more than 106 hours a week. But that isn't 106 hours a week in total. That's 106 hours a week in addition to the 60 hours a week that people normally work. Seeing as there are only 168 hours in the week anyway, and that tells you what the problem is. There is no choice. We're going to see that replicated in all of the industrialized nations in Western Europe and in North America in the next few years as they go through exactly the same thing. So there really is no choice as to this.
You haven't mentioned costs, and there are costs associated with RPA. So if someone's going to look at RPA and think this is going to be a free lunch, it's not. Where are the costs and how are they spread over the lifetime?
That's a really good question. The cost of buying a license is about a tenth of the cost of implementing RPA. Let's say you're going to buy 100 licenses, then for us, we have both unattended robots, which do those batch processing, unattended tasks in the back office, and we have attended robots, which augment and help call center and customer service individuals. Automation Anywhere has the same, Blue Prism doesn't.
When you say augmented, is that including the exception path? If you have a process that has an exception, you then feed that back to a human operator?
Correct. It's what's known as human in the loop. We're actually working with an organisation called Enate, that's E-N-A-T-E. That's their area of specialty. It's increasing the efficiency of the operation, including the handoff to humans. So it's very rare you can actually automate an entire process end-to-end. So that handoff between the robot and the human is very important to get that as efficient as possible. And one of the other companies we're working for is a company called Celonis, that's C-E-L-O-N-I-S. Their area of expertise is process mining. They work out what humans are actually doing as opposed to what they say they're doing or what's in the documentation, because it's never the same. And that was part of the problem with outsourcing, by the way. You always went through that sort of hypercare period in outsourcing where you do that knowledge transfer and then realize that what you've been told isn't actually what happens. So you have to go through that learning process. We have exactly the same in RPA. Celonis gets around that by working out exactly what is happening, all of the exceptions, all of the variables, where the bottlenecks are, and so on. At the moment, that output from Celonis is a map. I hate the phrase happy path, but it's that optimum process route with all the variables, so you can make that more efficient. Ultimately, we're going to be moving down the route where the output of that will be what's known as an XAML file, a XAML file, which will become the robot. Now, we're not there yet, but that means that we're effectively building self-building robots. So you won't need to use any software to build the robot. It will just watch what the human does and then go, ping, okay, I can automate this process for you now.
Watch what the human does on a system.
Correct. Across multiple systems. Watch what they do as part of their job.
There's a cost to RPA in terms of upfront cost, which you've kind of inferred, but what about ongoing costs as well? Because one of the advantages of RPA is what people look at is there's a cost. You say, well, you can get rid of X employees and it's going to save you lots of money because you're reducing the tasks they do. If I'm a CFO and I want to do a business case for RPA, what kind of costs do I need to include within my business plan?
Serendipitously, on the 30th of October, we have our European Forward event. So we have our UiPath Forward. At that event, we are launching the RPA playbook. That's been developed not by us, but by Everest, by Sarah Burnett, Amal Deep Modi, Michael Janssens, and the team there have developed the step-by-step guide about what you need to include, what you need to think about, what the costs are, what you need to include in terms of the cost ratios, how you work out the ROIs, right from inception through to what they would term as a pinnacle organization, so where it spreads throughout the organization. Now, in a moment, there are only about 15% of our customers are at that sort of global scale, Admiral in the UK being a good example of that. Most tend to stall at the stage where they've done the successful POC, they've scaled out across a number of processes and possibly a number of departments, then it sort of stalls. So this will help them get over that. That will be launched on 30th of October. But in terms of the cost of what you need to think about the license cost. With UiPath, you can actually start for free if you're a small organization, a not-for-profit, a university and so on. They can use our platform entirely free forever. But if you're a corporate, you pay for the licenses, you pay for the implementation if you're not doing it yourself. So that's our implementation partners, which is all of the outsourcers and the system integrators and the consulting organizations are all partners, not only of us, but also of Automation Anywhere and Blue Prism. Got that cost, which roughly works out about 8 to 10 times the license cost. And then the maintenance of the robots is generally covered by the license in terms of the actual physical robots, but you need to build up what's known as a center of excellence, a COE, where you've got people inside the organization. So as the processes change and adapt and you have new technologies coming, different platforms, upgrading and so on, then they make sure that the robots, and there's a cost associated with those people that were sitting within the organization.
That was one of my questions around, you know, how do you cope with changes to applications, changes to process due to compliance? You tend to have answered that. But finding those skilled people is not going to be easy. So what's the path that companies need to take? Do they need to train them up? And then how do they retain them? It's not an easy thing in a new industry.
That's a really good point. Anyone with RPA experience is a hot ticket now. What we've done is, in order for us to, this is UiPath, in order for us to democratize RPA across all industries, all geographies and all service lines within those industries, we've basically giving away all of our training for free. Originally, we set up UiPath Academy in April 2017, We've had over 100,000 people go through that course now. That started with the developers. These are the people that are actually developing the robots. We then extended that with UiPath 360 Degrees Academy, which is all the business associated roles that you need to help maintain and run your COE, your Center of Excellence.
Business analyst type training, do you mean?
Business analyst type training, also IT, enterprise architects, the managers that would actually run in, and so on and so forth. That's 360 degrees. We're now extending that again, so that we're now extending training to everybody, to children, aged 8 to 14-year-olds. So we've recently done a training course with schools in Romania, for instance, and it was a great story. They were using UiPath robots to play games, developing automations to play noughts and crosses or hangman. And one of the 8-year-old children said to their mother afterwards, Mummy, there's a ghost in my machine, a ghost in my computer, which I loved. Starting with children, because that's the 8 to 14-year-olds that are going to be moving into the work over the next 10, 15 years. We're also focusing on universities, working very closely with the universities in terms of providing training to university students, initially into the technology and business courses, so MBA courses and so on, so they're aware about what impact this RPA and AI stuff's going to have on their future work. We're also training up and reskilling and upskilling those people who are affected by automation, so those people that are worried about the impact of automation. As you mentioned, the people that moved from the farms to the cities. So we're training up and reskilling and upskilling those individuals so they're not scared about it anymore. And finally, which I'm really impressed about, is run by Diana Ockram and Anna Chinko. What they're doing is they're creating a training for immigrants. It's called inclusion and diversity. So, you know, people describe this as the fourth industrial revolution, but we're just at the start of this. The changes this is going to wrought across not only companies, but individuals and even societies. It sounds hyperbole, but it is true. It will make an impact on society as a whole.
One of the quotes I picked up, RPA software robot never sleeps, makes zero mistakes and costs a lot less than an employee. Sounds brilliant, but if you put garbage in, you always get garbage out. So what happens when things go wrong, and how do companies protect themselves in the contract arrangements with the SI or with companies like UiPath to ensure that actually they have a system that doesn't cause a huge problem down the road for them?
The garbage in, garbage out issue is one that's been around since computers were invented. That's not going to change as a result of RPA. However, what RPA and the inclusion of the AIE type tools, I got famous last year for saying two things. One was outsourcing is dead, and the other one is AI is bollocks. Both of those went viral, surprisingly enough. If you take combination of those type of technologies, what we're starting to see is that organizations are moving towards the management of those almost as a human resource. Some organizations refer to them as FTRs, full-time robotic employee type. So that digital workforce type stuff, which I don't really agree with, but that digital worker will work alongside the humans. In terms of managing that and managing the changes, the technology is improving. So we've always been slightly ahead of the other competitors when it comes to computer vision. As things change on the screen, as the underlying applications get patched or updated, it doesn't matter where the things are on screen. If you compare that with, so the macros of old, you had to specify where on the screen it would be and what colour the font was and so on in order to get it to work. If that field moved, then it would break the automation. The computer vision is now good enough that it doesn't matter where things are on the screen, it will be able to do that. But nevertheless, you still need people to manage that process. And it's a change management process. It's not a technology process. And interestingly, if you look at our ecosystems, as well as the implementation partners, a lot of the work is being done by the large independent software vendors, the Microsofts, the Googles, the SAPs, the Oracles, and so on. They want to bake UiPath and our competitors into their platforms because we sell to business people, we don't sell to IT. It offers them an entirely new route to market. But the relationship between the business and the IT, which is sometimes fraught, is actually being proved by RPA. And the EAs, the enterprise architects, I went to a Gartner conference at the start of this year where it was all EAs, and the audience was fairly evenly split between those that were willfully ignorant and those that were actively hostile, because they just thought, well, why don't you just do this properly using BPM and all the rest of it? What we're seeing is that's changing, and it's changing because these technologies, think of it like a Venn diagram. This is an idea that Adam Devine of WorkFusion had. So you think about these different technologies, BPM and ERP and RPA and AI, they're not going to come together in a single blob, because no one company is going to dominate the market the same way that Microsoft did within the Office over the last 30 years. But what we're going to see is that growth of that ecosystem. And it's where those Venn diagrams come together and you've got the blurring of the edges. That's where RPA and AI really are going to sit. So it's facilitation rather than elimination. And actually, there's a really interesting company called Sapho, S-A-P-H-O, that are now skinning enterprise applications, Salesforce, SAP, whatever. Because if you've got the robot doing the back office, that churn, the automating of that, you don't need to see, you don't need to be trained up on Salesforce or SAP, because all you need to do is have the skin that actually tells you what you need to do your job, and then the robots do the rest. So that's an interesting dynamic. C-suites of companies are saying, we need AI. I mean, there's a reason that Amazon and Uber have become verbs. No one wants to get Ubered. No one wants to get digitally disrupted. They're saying, we need AI. They have no idea what they're talking about. We need mobile. We need internet. We need a website. It's always gone back in time. That's what it means. But it's a conglomeration of those tools. It's that ecosystem of technology companies. Now, interestingly, those technology companies in natural language processing, in machine learning, in deep neural networks, in ontologies, they want to bait themselves into our platform because we're growing so fast. We've gone from 127 employees to 1,400 since the start of last year. We now have 40% of the Fortune 500 in the last 2 years. In fact, over the last 21 months, we've gone from 1 million annual recurring revenue to 100 million annual recurring revenue. That doesn't make us the fastest growing RPA business. That potentially, and we have no way of proving this, that potentially makes us the fastest growing enterprise software business in history.
One of the things I've picked up, and it's one of my personal viewpoints, is the danger of AI, the danger of RPA, is that I see us losing the bottom levels of the knowledge pyramid from individuals. As people rely more and more on technology, they don't have the base understanding of how the business actually works, because they come in, they can deal with the customers face to face, but they don't necessarily understand the processes. And there are fewer and fewer people who do. There are lots of examples of that in terms of BT with their engineers. They've had to rehire a lot of retired engineers because they've still got a copper network and they still need to know how it works. Yes, fiber is the answer of the future, but it's never going to be there.
Unless and until OpenSpan is separated, the umbilical cord is cut.
Even there, the engineers are still missing who understand the copper. They're having to retrain a whole lot of apprentices to understand it.
That was Micro Focus's entire business model, is to have the people that understand COBOL. There will always be a need for those type of individuals. What we're actually seeing is that we now talk about the addressable market for this stuff is a robot for every employee. And that came from conversations that we had with our private equity and venture capital backers. So it includes Sequoia and Capital G and Accel and so on. Because you go and see a private equity organization, the first question is, what's the addressable market for your product? And because RPA cuts across everything, it is essentially, in the same way that everyone's got their own computer, everyone will have their own robot to do the crappy stuff that you don't want to do and augment and help you to do the stuff that you do want to do. That is ultimately the direction of travel. The underlying applications will almost become invisible because you only need to interact with those applications as and when you need to do it. But Ian Barkin, who is one of the founders of Symphony Ventures, is one of the RPA-first providers, what he said is that it's like a process sediment. You look at a sedimentary rock, it's layers and layers and layers. That's how businesses have been run and built up over the last 40, 50, 60 years. In most cases, no one has any idea why process X should have these particular steps. From a technology standpoint, you can see that the increase in the use of user interface elements prompted not only a change in the technology, but also a change in the process. Ironically enough, robots love green screen applications because it's so much faster. They don't need the click and drop and drag and radio buttons and all the rest of it. But essentially what we're doing is that organizations can reimagine the processes using RPA and use RPA as a disposable asset. It gives them room, basically, to think about how they can restructure the processes that sit within their organization and say, remind me, why do we do this in this way? But that, again, is a business transformation, digital transformation.
Once you've done the RPA, can you then delve down to understand what that process is? Can you open up the hood, or is it like a modern car where you just open up the bonnet and you see there's a sealed engine unit?
No, it's not could, it's should. So it's not that you could look, you absolutely should look at transforming your organization at the same time as doing RPA. Because RPA doesn't mess with the data, because it doesn't mess with the technology that it sits on, because it sits above it, operating exactly the same way the human does through the user interface, it gives you that time to actually look at the processes and actually change them.
That's a different answer. That's a different question in a sense. I agree with what you're saying. What I'm trying to get to is that my background is a CIO.
Yeah.
Prior to that, I've done just about every job in IT. I have COBOL programming knowledge. I have C programming. I started as a C programmer. 20 years later, have a development team, sit next to a developer who's got a problem, and they don't understand why they've got a problem. But because I've got the background, because I've done assembler, because I've done C, I can see what their fourth generation language is trying to do. I understand the bit behind the fourth generation language, and I can see, well, he's probably got a Stack Overflow problem, which is a C problem, not a 4GL problem. But they don't understand it. And that's the danger, in a sense, of RPA. Even within business processes, you obfuscate what the underlying technology is.
I think that's probably true, because it doesn't matter what the underlying technology is. The robots don't care. A lot of commentators are now talking about technical debt. If you are keeping alive these old crappy systems that you've been trying to get rid of for the last 20 years, 30 years in some cases, RPA is keeping them alive. So there are two outcomes from that. One is you still need the people to look after those systems. Secondly, you need to be able to map the process with the technology. And the advantage of RPA, unlike outsourcing, is that when someone does a task in outsourcing, or indeed prior to, or in a shared service operation, it's in their heads. Whereas in RPA, it's mapped every single step, even down to the keystroke level. So you can see that the documentation comes as a natural progression of using RPA. So you can spot the things that are causing that. And then if you add in tools like Celonis, that will also be able to see where stuff is broken and how you can get around it.
Once you've got that map, one assumes you can then revisit it and say, right, this is our current map. Look at what your strategy for the future process outcome is, and then completely redesign it with a full knowledge of what's there currently.
And that's why the consulting companies are training up their people as fast as they possibly can on RPA. Because it's a really good first step, taking their clients — we don't own the relationship with the C-suites of those of our clients generally, they do. So it's those consulting organisations, the Deloittes, the PwCs, the EYs, the Accentures, that are using RPA as the first step for digital transformation. Because it's relatively quick, it's relatively cheap, and the ROIs are good.
What's the first step that companies should make when considering RPA?
At Forward, if people are interested in coming, we have Sean Williamson from DWP, Department for Work and Pensions. He was utterly astounded when they went into doing automation, that they went from inception to live production across a number of processes in 12 weeks. He was expecting 12 months. And they saved £6 million on the pilot alone. The speed with which this can be done is eye-watering. Therefore, the first step is to work out where you want to go with this. What's the journey that you want to go through? Then you can start to identify the processes that you think are appropriate. And actually, what I recommend organizations do, because UiPath is just one of the vendors, as we've discussed, is that you organize a hackathon. So you pick 3, 4, 5 processes, a simple one, a couple of medium ones, and a really complex thing, gnarly, possibly over Citrix, because robots hate Citrix, because you're looking at a picture. And then get 2, 3, 4 of the vendors in: UiPath, Automation Anywhere, Blue Prism, WorkFusion, NICE, or whatever it might be, Kofax, and say, ready, steady, automate that, live, right now. Because very quickly, you'll figure out which organization you want to work with and which technology you think is going to be comfortable with. And by the way, the answer is not always UiPath. So that's a really good way of doing it. And you can get your implementation partner, the consulting partner, or your outsourcer, or your system integration partner, to facilitate that process. They will have some ideas as to who they prefer and who they've got most people trained in. In the UK, that's mainly Blue Prism, actually, because given the longevity of the organisation here. Across all of the organisations, there is skill and capability. One look at the Gartner Peer Insights, they're all pretty much even.
Guy, thank you very much.
Thank you very much indeed. Thanks.